It is noon on YouTube, but it is 5 o'clock somewhere, which means the happy hour bar is open. What's up? I'm your bartender, Matthew Berry. Thank you so much once again for joining me. And today, I'm very excited to welcome a longtime friend of mine in the industry, one of the best guys I think out there, absolutely crushes it every single year, year in and year out, a fellow Roto-World alum, my buddy Adam Levitan from EstablishTheRun.com. All the guys over there at ETR, you guys just do such a great job, Adam. And thank you so much for showing up. And I appreciate you wearing the hat so that people that are unfamiliar with what you look like now and only know you from your avatar are unaware of just how insanely old that picture is.
Can you imagine changing your profile picture? You don't see Apple or AT&T or Ford change their logo. Why should Adam Levitan change his logo?
Well, I think probably because those companies, while I appreciate that you put yourself in the same company as a as an Apple, I think probably because those there's a timelessness, if you will, to those companies, whereas Father Time, much like it has with me, has not been as kind to you.
Yes. However, to take a picture now, I would have to go with the full, I guess, Berry haircut, in which I'm going to go ahead and stick with my 2006 profile picture.
It's fair enough. I mean, you know what? I feel like I should. So my profile picture is me. My profile picture on X is me and Jimmy Buffett, who, you know, is very meaningful to me. And I saw 45 shows before he passed and whatever, you know, I'm a crazy parrot head. And I've been thinking like I should change it. Like, so every other social media profile that I have, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, whatever, you name it, I'm at Matthew Berry TMR on all of them. You are at Adam Levitan on all of them. But all of those avatars are me and my wife. Because about a year and a half ago, Adam, my then 12-year-old daughter, she's now 14, but my then 12-year-old daughter was just like, well, she like finally got onto Instagram and of course immediately goes to see, you know, mine, and she goes, wait, why isn't your picture with mommy? Don't you love mommy? And so immediately, obviously, I had to change all of my profile pictures to prove I loved mommy. But I haven't done it on Twitter because, of course, my kids aren't on Twitter. They're not on X. But I have been reluctant to change it. I feel like I should just be consistent across platform, but I have been reluctant to change it somewhat as well. Aloha Brick says, pick one, Barry or the Paul Feinbaum haircut. Is it more of a Barry or is it more of a Feinbaum, you think?
Gosh. Well, I try to really like shave the sides all the way down so that it looks somewhat even, you know what I mean? And like even like bald even, you know, not half even.
Now, a Miles 1924 says Abuka hurt in practice today, Ted Hurst to the moon. I have not seen that. I literally was doing my own makeup. I was getting here. I was going over the pre-show production with all the team here. Is this, okay, Jay Woogie says, nothing serious with the Abuka, just got rolled up on, stayed on the sideline, rest of practice. All right, so we can breathe a sigh of relief, which would be interesting, and that's a good name for an album. But Adam, it's appropriate that Ted Hurst gets brought up here because he's a late round sleeper that I like. He's not somebody we're going to talk about today, but I will tell you that I had a source, I have a very good Buccaneer source who tells me Ted Hurst is absolutely crushing it in Buccaneers camp.
So they don't have a pure X receiver. I do not consider Jalen McMillan a pure X, neither Egbuka, neither Godwin. And I think Egbuka's best role will be at Z. Obviously, Godwin's best role is slot. I think they're going to try to start with McMillan at X. He had a little bit of a knee thing, which I think gave some people some hype on Hurst also. McMillan was back in individual drills yesterday. I think they're going to start him at X. If he fails there, I think that's how Ted Hurst kind of gets his role, because he is a natural X and they lost that with Mike Evans. So yeah, I mean, I think Ted Hurst in round 18, 19 is something that I'm willing to consider at least right now.
Yeah, I think he's, again, I do think there's this, look, I think it's going to, assuming health, it's going to be Godwin and Abuka. Abuka and a Godwin are going to get the majority of the targets here. But I do think there's a opportunity that Hurst could bypass McMillan for that third wide receiver spot on the outside. So I agree with you there. Before we get into our late round sleepers, Adam, I want to talk about this happened on yesterday's show. It broke live and we talked about it a little bit, but the Vikings have named Kyler Murray their week one starter. So I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive here on this, a little bit of like, you know, no kidding, right? I mean, I think we all expected this to happen. I think all of the ranks that I have at fantasylife.com, I'm sure all the ones at ETR also reflect that you guys have all your projections have baked in the idea that Kyler was going to start all along. But it's nice to know it's official and that Kevin O'Connell's not going to play the games. Like, we'll have to wait till week one, you know, that we see some of these coaches do. Where are you on Kyler this year? I've seen a lot of discourse like, to the moon, he's with KOC, he's indoors, Justin Jefferson. I've also seen, like, this guy hasn't been good for a while, as I'm painfully aware, because he was my ride or die 2 years ago before he got hurt. So, after he got hurt, where I thought he was coming back before he got benched. Where are you on Kyler this year?
So, I think first, it's a really good thing that they made this announcement. I was frankly annoyed because we have a pretty high position on Kyler Murray. I was annoyed that he was not getting all of the reps. He is new to the system. As you mentioned, he has not played well in a long time. He is new to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and KOC and the scheme. He should be getting every first team rep. So I was annoyed that they weren't doing that. So I'm glad to see that hopefully now they're going to go down that path. You do not have to be a great NFL quarterback to have fantasy success with the Vikings in this scheme. We saw Nick Mullins do it. We saw Sam Darnold do it. We saw Carson Wentz do it. We saw, I don't remember, Josh Dobbs was signed.
Come on, Josh Dobbs, the Pastronaut.
The Pastronaut was signed like off the street. It goes in the system. He has like 3 days to prepare. He goes out and scores 20 fantasy points in this system. So I agree with the people who have a problem with Kyler as a player. I think that the way he runs and the way KOC schemes, you are going to get a payoff because there's a lot of people out there who think Kyler is just total dust. So if he goes around pick 120, I think we have him closer to pick 100. And for season long specifically, like, I personally think late round quarterback is a really attractive strategy this year in redraft formats. And Kyler can certainly be part of that. Draft two quarterbacks, Kyler and Goff, or Kyler and Love, or Kyler and Tilar, whatever you want, and kind of play matchups there. I think Kyler's an interesting part of that.
I could not agree more. We're in lockstep here. I'm at 102 overall. I'm at QB 14. So consensus ADP is 126. So consensus ADP. So we have at fantasylife.com, we have a tool that gives you the ADP of every single site. And so across the industry, and it also includes Underdog there. So you've got some best ball in there, and it includes FFPC. So you've got some high stakes in there and NFFC. So you've got the high stakes guys. You've got like Underdog, RT Sports. You've got some best ball stuff in there. And then of course you've got the season longs, the ESPNs, the Yahoos, the CBSs of the world. But his consensus ADP across industry is 126. I am at 102. I'm at QB 14. He's at QB 17 in the overall consensus as well. Look, in every season he's played at least 8 games, Adam, he's finished as a top 12 fantasy quarterback on a points per game basis, right? And to give you a different stat that says what you did about whether it's Nick Mullins or Josh Dobbs or Carson Wentz or literally anybody that has played quarterback for Kevin O'Connell, not named J.J. McCarthy. The Vikings have been top 10 in fantasy quarterbacks on a point per game basis in 3 of KOC's 4 seasons as a head coach and play caller in Minnesota. And I think, you know, adding Juwan Jennings to this roster, along with Addison and Jefferson, I think Hockenson, another year removed from the injury, I think it's going to be a pretty good offensive line. I think it's a pretty good run game that'll be balanced. So, I like the fact that he gets to play indoors on turf. Hopefully they move him around a little bit before they move him. But I know that going out to the combine, when I was at the combine, I do my annual column, my 35 most interesting rumors I hear at the combine. And you and Evan, by the way, I have to say, you know, I love the big dog Evan Silva, one of the goats of our industry. But you and Evan are always so incredibly kind, specifically about that column every single year. So I have to say thank you for the love. You guys always show that column. But what I was going to say is just at the combine, the talk that I heard, and it's in that column, was that they absolutely were not coming back to JJ McCarthy, and Kyler was somebody that they had sort of circled as a guy that they thought would be available and that they were interested in.
Yeah. The reason that I love that column so much is because I actually believe rumors. Like, I want to know. I want to know all the information, and then I will distill it to what I think is real and what is not. That stuff is so valuable, especially in today's age where there's so much more information out there. Like, when I first started doing this for Roto World, no one was reading anything. Like, I would read something and no one would talk about it for days. And, you know, now as soon as any tweet goes out or any article goes out, everybody sees it. The more valuable information now to me is like the rumors. So yeah, anything that people like Matthew Berry hears, I want to know so I can distill it. So yeah, I love that. And I'm not surprised that they targeted Kyler. I mean, JJM was just one of the worst quarterback seasons you can possibly have as an NFL quarterback last year.
It was pretty tough. Hey, before we move off of this subject real quickly, I just want to know, obviously you're high on Kyler, as am I. So I think, are you on the belief as well that you guys, that this translates to Justin Jefferson? Because I've heard some of the talk of like, well, he wasn't able to get the ball to Marvin Harrison. Although, candidly, neither really was Jacoby Brissett. It's been a spotted NFL career so far for Marvin Harrison. And I don't know if we can blame that entirely on Kyler or how much it was that scheme, how much where they've obviously changed the offensive system in Arizona now, or respectfully, Marvin Harrison is not Justin Jefferson at this stage of his career.
Okay. Yeah, this is tough because I think Justin Jefferson remains one of, if not the best wide receivers in the NFL. One of the concerns that I have with Justin Jefferson at 8 or 9 overall, well, there's multiple. The first one would be, I think we have seen that if Kyler Murray does not play well, they will get another look at JJ McCarthy. So let's say the Vikings are out of the playoffs. It's week 14.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, we have nothing invested in Kyler. We're paying him $1 million. We have a first round pick invested in JJ. We're out of the playoffs. Let's see if JJ can play. In the fantasy playoffs, that would be a disaster for Justin Jefferson. I think Kyler's going to play well. I think they're going to make the playoffs, but the betting market isn't even on that. You know, like Vikings are plus money to make the playoffs. Okay. The second concern that I have with taking Justin Jefferson 8 or 9 overall is structural reasons. I want to be running back heavy at the top of drafts typically this year. And if you take Justin Jefferson, you're just like immediately going to fall behind at running back, which is okay in best ball and some other formats. I think if I'm playing in a 12 team home league with my friends, I think when it's close, and I think it's close between Jefferson and JT, close between Jefferson and Kenneth Walker, when it's close like that, I'm going to lean running back personally there this year.
I'm at 10 overall, my wide receiver 5. I'm more in on a bounce back. I think even if they don't make the playoffs, I think they'll be competitive for the playoffs. So I think it's barring injury, I think Kyler is their starter for the year, because I think they'll still be playing for for a playoff spot.
Evening, buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
G'day, I'm Justin Wolfers, host of the Platypus Economics Podcast. If there's one thing I've learned from a career teaching economics, it's that your life is shaped by economic currents you'll never see. A single price tag can explain things 1,000 experts can't. People who understand economics, they make better decisions in their careers, their finances, their relationships, and their communities, and I want that for you. Listen to and follow Platypus Economics, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so let's move on to late round sleepers. And look, it's tough in this industry, especially when you play as in many different formats as you and I do, Adam. And what's a late round sleeper in a 10 team or 12 team home league is not a sleeper in, I'm in a 12 team 33 man league dynasty league, right? Where where we were arguing over whether Drew Aller is going to go in the third round. So I mean, like, it's it's always hard to quantify what a late round sleeper is. But for the purposes of this, we're kind of going with 12 team home league types. Anyone that's going after pick 100, on the major sites, on ESPN, Yahoo, CBS, Sleeper, you name it. So kind of at past pick 100, past the 10th round, on kind of the main redraft sites. That's how we're defining this so far. And I want to start with you because you think there's some opportunity in Green Bay.
Yeah, I'm surprised these guys are going so late. And I'm referring to Jaden Reed and Matthew Golden both. I mean, the Packers have consistently used five wide receivers in a rotation historically. So that has led to really flat route shares and target shares. What I thought was really interesting was they said publicly after the season, they thought that was a mistake, that rotating this many wide receivers was a mistake. And they followed through on that talk by getting rid of Romeo Dobbs and Dontavian Wicks. So for the first time in recent memory, I am expecting a really tight route tree and a tight route concentration and target concentration around Christian Watson, Matthew Golden on the outside, and Jaden Reed in the slot. And on top of that, I think they can be more pass heavy this season. Josh Jacobs coming off that PCL injury could be suspended still. We don't know. This should be the season to put the ball in Jordan Love's hands more. And those receivers, I think, are really good talents and will be out there a ton. So I take a lot of both Jaden Reed and Matthew Golden.
I prefer Reed to Golden. Since he entered the NFL, Jaden Reed leads all wide receivers, literally all wide receivers in fantasy points per target, minimum of 150 targets. Like, I always believe, you know, and it's raised the flags, ask, is there a chance Reed will be wide receiver one over Christian Watson? I think there's a chance. I don't think it's a great chance. I have Watson ranked highest. I think Watson could be really special this year. But Jaden Reed can play. And you watch those Packers games, and Adam, you and I are on the same page on this one as well. So it's like, why can't we get Jaden Reed more of the ball? Why are we messing around with all these other guys? And so finally, he's going to be the slot guy. I think they'll find creative ways. They have previously of, you know, doing end arounds, doing quick bubble screens, just different ways to try to get the ball in his hand, manufacture touches for him. Golden, I'm a little less enthusiastic about. So I have Reed at wide receiver 38. He's going as wide receiver 47. So I'm above consensus on him as well. I'm at 83 overall. ADP is 110. So significantly ahead of the market on Jaden Reed, I am as well. Golden, I'm more in line with the market, right? I'm at 116. He's 121 overall. Look, we all saw the playoff game. That's great. But regardless of whether Josh Jacobs is playing or it's Marshawn Lloyd or whatever, the fact is I still think that LaFleur wants to be more run-heavy than not. You've got Watson and Reed, who we like a lot. Tucker Kraft is back, who I think is a top five tight end. So it's just how many balls are there to go around? And so Golden needs those big plays to pay off. Like, this is a guy who had two red zone targets last year, literally two. So he's going to be on the field a lot more. So I get the upside on Golden. I'm just not as give me Reed over Golden, I guess. But whatever. In the 13th round, why not on Matthew Golden, who is a first round draft pick?
Yeah, and Matthew Golden did not do a good job of earning targets last year, which is what you're referring to. And that, to me, is a skill. You know, can you earn targets at the NFL level? Packers fans will tell you that he was hurt last year. They are rotating him too much, and that's why he did not earn targets at a high enough rate. There's certainly more risk in Golden, and I agree with you. Reed over Golden here for me, even though I do think Golden will play more raw snaps.
Dan wants to know, what about former Green Bay wide receiver Romeo Dobbs? Better or worse now that he's in New England? I'd say better, just because after A.J. Brown, there's no one there that's scared. I mean, I know Kayshon Booty's having a really good camp, and you've got Pop Douglas there, but there's a chance that Dobbs could carve out the number two role there, so which I don't think was ever going to happen in Green Bay. I'm not excited about Dobbs, candidly, at either place, but just to answer your question, Dan, that's what I would say. My first guy as a late-round sleeper, I'm going to go with Josh Downs, who I think was going to start out as a trendy sleeper, and then I think everyone's just sort of, I don't know, he's gotten snoozy or whatever, or just people are out on the Colts, you know? But again, like, Pierce is currently on PUP. He hasn't practiced since undergoing that ankle surgery. Obviously, no Michael Pittman. And in games on routes in which Michael Pittman was not on the field, Josh Downs, for his career, when Michael Pittman was not on the field, Josh Downs was targeted on over 25% of his routes. As we talk about, again, I said this yesterday on the show, you just mentioned it, in terms of targets are earned. And so Josh Downs, like, you think about who's, so we've got Alec Pierce, of course, and we all love Tyler Warren. But behind Josh Downs, we're looking at Ashton Doolin, Anthony Gould, friend of fantasy Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, the touchdown machine. Like, there's not a lot of depth there. And so Josh Downs, who's currently going at 104. His wide receiver 43 is entirely possible to be the number one pass catcher on what we think is going to be a pretty good offense. Like, we like Alex Pierce, but even I don't think Pierce is going to get a massive target share. Like, hopefully they expand his route tree where he's not just getting the deep targets that started to happen a little bit last year, Adam. But I think Exhausted Texans saying the hype on Josh Downs is getting exhausting. I disagree. It feels like Downs was hyped early in the preseason, kind of early in best ball season, but I don't feel like it's been nearly as much recently. And so his ADP hasn't moved that much. Again, he's still outside the top 100. So yeah, give me some Josh Downs, who I have at 82 overall. Again, two rounds ahead of consensus.
Yeah, if this is the right ADP on Josh Downs, that's an absolute smash. I mean, just a total steal. I agree that we have him in the 80s also. You know, obviously you see how it works for Josh Downs. There's very little target competition there. Daniel Jones coming off of the Achilles, he might have to check down a little bit more. Everybody loves Josh Downs. Tape bros, analytics bros. They're talking about having him more in two wide receiver
frat
sets.
Bros. I'm sure if you go to any fraternity, all the bros. Yeah.
Everybody loves Josh Downs. My concern is at 5'9", 171, how many targets can he take on? You know, and so we have seen.
Aren't you like 5'9", 171, Adam?
That's not a good sign. Yeah, that's not a good sign. Yeah.
I just want to make sure. So you know what you're talking about is what you're saying. Yeah, okay,
exactly.
Fair enough.
And I do think the Colts are the most likely team to add a wide receiver at some point before week one. You know, it used to be the Commanders. It was so obvious They were going to add one. And now I think the Colts, they have to. I mean, as long as this Pierce thing lingers, they have no one. So Keenan Allen, whatever else is out there that gets cut, they're going to add someone. So I don't want to overstate Downs' role, but he is a very, very good player who will be in a very good role. And pick 100 is just an absolute steal.
Yeah, Aloha Bricks wants to know, Downs or Jaden Higgins? Downs for me.
Yes, agreed.
And we'll move on here in 1 second. The only other thing I'll say there is he probably goes a little bit earlier when you mentioned ADP, probably goes a little bit earlier in sharper leagues, more industry leagues. But I do think there is a lot of, as you watch analysis from people like myself and Adam and everyone else in the industry, and there's so many people out there doing great work. But the truth is there is a little bit of a groupthink that happens. And Adam, for lack of a better phrase, there's a bit of a snobbery. Like, I feel like that people that give fantasy analysis, honestly, don't play in normal home leagues and just like, you know, oh, Josh Downs, well, there's no way that guy ever goes outside the seventh round. I'm like, walk into a normal, quote unquote, like just 10 guys in the neighborhood getting together for a draft, and he absolutely goes there. I don't think people, there's too much kind of snobbery or elitism or like, you know, the people that do 150 best ball drafts by June 1st is a very, very small section of the millions of people that play fantasy football. And I think too many analysts forget that.
Yes. And I think people also forget with Matthew specifically, like the audience that Matthew is speaking to is way different than the audience that I am speaking to, right? Like Matthew is like on NBC talking to millions of people who are playing fantasy. I'm talking mostly to the people that Matthew's describing who have done 150 best ball drafts before June 1, you know? So yeah, for any people out there, like knowing your audience, I think is important also.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, it's time for Cokeheads to unite. Happy Hour fans know this. Cokeheads unite. The big playoff game last year. Amazing. It was finally the breakout for Jalen Coker that we were all hoping for. And you have him as a late round sleeper.
Yeah. I mean, he goes really late, I think, for a guy who definitely can play and is seeing a role bump. I mean, absolutely no doubt every down wide receiver opposite. Yep. Tedrory McMillan this year, Panthers confirmed that by playing Coker ahead of Leggett last year, and then confirmed it again with a new three-year $35 million contract in the offseason. Per target stuff on Coker is really good. Per route stuff is really good. The problem and why he's not going higher is just Bryce Young. Bryce Young goes into these ruts where they try to hide him. They go very run heavy. And I simply just don't think Bryce Young is very good, period. And that's what's holding Coker back. But if you think that Bryce can have something of a leap, something of a step forward, Coker's going to beat this ADP. And, you know, on your bench, it gets to the bye weeks. You have some injuries. You have to start Jalen Coker. There will be much worse guys that you could start than Jalen Coker. So as it starts to get this deep, you know, it's harder at wide receiver. I think there's other positions where it might be easier. Coker is a rare every down player who I think can play available in the 130s.
For his career, 9.8 yards per target, seventh best among wide receivers that have at least 75 targets for the last 2 years. Injuries to the position, they might actually have to start Leggett now in three wide receiver sets. But to your point, it's going to be McMillan. It's going to be Jalen Coker. So Cokeheads unite. This is our year. I have him at 129 overall. His consensus ADP is 137. So I'm ahead of the consensus. I'm right there with you on Jalen Coker. I'm actually going to stay in Carolina. Surprisingly, we've got two Panthers here. But, as Aloha Brick says, Jalen Coker or Jalen Noel this year. Coker for me.
Not even close. I'm not even sure what Jalen Noel's role is going to be.
Yeah, no, I don't think the Texans are either. But I'm going with Jonathan Brooks here, which is another one like similar to Josh Downs, who's kind of a trendy sleeper. I'm cheating a little bit. His ADP is 102, so he's right there on the cusp. But I haven't had a chance to talk about Brooks so far this season, so I kind of wanted to sneak him in here as well. Like, the fact is like Chuba Hubbard, and listen, I have Chuba Hubbard in a bunch of dynasty leagues, so I hope I'm wrong on this, but I don't think I'm going to be, which is that Jonathan Brooks has a chance to win for a running back going in the 10th round or later. Jonathan Brooks is one of the few guys that has a legit chance to be the starting running back without injury. Chuba Hubbard lost his job to Rico Dowdle last year. All the efficiency metrics are very poor on Hubbard. Explosive run rate, yards after contact per attempt, broken tackle, percentage. Like, pick a stat, and Hubbard was bad in pretty much all of them. And so you've got a guy who was, the first running back selected in 2024. I know he's coming off the two ACLs. We haven't seen him on an NFL field. But if you go back to the college tape and you think about the opportunity and you think about this offense under Dave Canales that got multiple 200-yard games out of Rico Dowdle last year, like, if Jonathan Brooks shows any sort of a flash, and all the reports out of camp, Adam, are that he is, he's got a chance to be the – I don't think Hubbard's going away. Like, they paid him too much money. They like multiple backs, but Brooks could easily carve out, 15 to 17 touches a game as the lead of a committee on a decent offense in Carolina.
I think a better pick in redraft than best ball. If the knee never returns to form in redraft, you burned a 10th round pick. What's the big deal? In best ball, he's going to be going in the 80s lately. And if he does not return to form, that is a lot of draft capital to burn on a Panthers running back off of two ACL tears. So I think he's a very fine pick in redraft. Agree with you, Chuba Hubbard is just a guy. And I think the most important part of Brooks's college profile was the receiving stuff. He profiled to come into the NFL and be a good receiving back. Chuba Hubbard has not been that. And so at a minimum, I think Brooks should go ahead and get that role. There's been so much optimism out of Carolina. Like, he practiced all of OTAs, all of minicamp season, looks good in training camp. So I'm skeptical on the injury stuff, but right now, all the signs look good.
Yeah. So anyway, and to your point, I agree with your analysis, by the way, that it's a much better redraft pick than he is a best ball kind of guy, especially in the eighth round in terms of where he's going. And that's what I mean about sort of knowing your audience, right? Because there is an audience of drafters that want to be seen as sharp. And so they'll actually overdraft a player just to be like, see, I was in on that guy. And there's just a little bit of sometimes overcorrection, I think, there. Wolf John says Brooks, Marks, or Monunge, better chance to take over. I'll say I'm going to say Jonathan Brooks, but I really like Kyle Monunge this year.
Yeah, I think it's Brooks easily. Actually think DeAndre Swift is a really good player, and Swift is not going to lose the job unless he gets hurt. Whereas I agree with your first take about Chuba Hubbard. Like, Brooks could certainly steal that job. But it really depends what you think about Swift.
Yeah, I like Swift too. I was going to say, I would rank those in terms of most likely to steal the number one job. I would rank them Brooks, Monunge, Marks.
Yes.
I think DeAndre Swift is similar to David Montgomery this year. No one's excited about David Montgomery. He's snoozy. He's boring. You're in your draft and you take him. No one's going to be like, ooh, good pick. Or like, oh man, you sniped me. Like, you're not going to get that when you take Dave Montgomery. People are just going to be like, okay, whatever. But then you're going to look up at the end of the year and he's going to have 1,200 yards and like 8 touchdowns. Like, he's going to be the lead running back of a pretty good offense. And it's not going to be pretty or efficient, but it will get you fantasy points.
Yeah, Dave Montgomery is going to touch the ball 300 times, barring injury, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Not efficient, but he will get there. All right. Listen, we were talking about Josh Downs. We were talking about you. So we're talking about size, not necessarily the biggest people in the NFL. I don't know if I'm sensing a theme here, but Keaton Mitchell is on your list, Adam. Let's talk about Keaton Mitchell. It's the small show.
Yes. I want to put outliers, athletic outliers, football outliers on my team and see what happens. And I definitely think we can consider Keaton Mitchell an outlier. I mean, if you just watch this guy, he is absolutely shot out of a cannon every time he touches the ball. No one's been able to tackle him in the NFL. He's only had 121 career carries due to some injuries. 6.3 yards per carry is outrageous. 9.7 yards per reception is outrageous. Now, he's very small, as Matthew mentioned. I don't think he's going to be a workhorse at any point, but he's going to have, I think, his own weekly role, like 5 to 9 touches. Maybe that's enough to start for your team if you're in a deep enough league. But either way, I just want to put him on my team and see what happens. And like we've seen this with Mike McDaniel before, turn a small, explosive, fast back. Keaton Mitchell is the same size as Devon Achane. Turn that into a monster. So I don't think that Keaton Mitchell is going to, you know, take over for Marin Hampton, but your own weekly carved out role, a little bit of handcuff appeal, and just a freak athlete. I want to put those kind of guys on my bench.
What's the best? Aloha Brooks asking, if you draft Hampton, you need Mitchell as a handcuff. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced on that. In a world where Hampton goes down, I actually think, because I don't think they'll, he still wouldn't get that role because they need pass protection. So I think Kamani Vidal, I think it would be a split backfield between Vidal and Mitchell, with Mitchell being the fantasy asset you wanted. But I don't think he would I don't think he's a pure handcuff in the way that we normally use it. You know, the way that you know, Brian Robinson, if Bijan goes down or whatever, right?
Yep.
Where you would feel like that guy would get the majority of work. But what do you think the best case, in a world where Omarion Hampton stays healthy all season, what's the best case scenario for Keaton Mitchell this year? Is it Kenneth Gainwell last year? Like, where's the, you know, give me a best case scenario for Keaton Mitchell. Cause I agree with you on the talent. Yeah. And Mike McDaniel was actively like, this is the guy I want, pounding the table, go get me Keaton Mitchell, to Joe Ortiz, their general manager. And of course that's what ended up happening. So clearly there's a scheme fit and a desire by McDaniel to use him.
Yeah, I like Omarion Hampton. I'm not convinced he's like some superstar that needs 25 touches a game. And so I think if they don't want to give Kamani Vidal touches unless Omarion Hampton gets hurt, and you have two man backfield instead of three, and Keaton Mitchell plays well enough and he can get 8 to 10 touches per game, that's somewhere in the Gainwell range, probably a little bit lower than what Gainwell was at last year. But yeah, you're betting on efficiency, and like on these outlier guys, it's hard. It's not comfortable. I'd rather bet on David Montgomery to just churn out on 300 touches. But that's why Keaton Mitchell goes around pick 140 and David Montgomery goes around pick 50, you know? So that just is what it is. But yeah, I agree with you. Like anything more than 10 to 12 touches a game for Keaton would surprise me.
Phil OB25 says, I get the hype in him fitting McDaniel's system, but I feel like this is more of a best ball play. Do you have more Mitchell in best ball than you do in redraft, Adam? For people that don't know, Adam is, in my mind, one of the elite best ball minds in our industry. He does a great job, specifically in that format. You do it across the industry. I think you're really good on props as well, but I know best ball is one of the focuses that you do in my opinion, very well.
Yes. Well, when you're addicted to drafting, you have to start drafting right after the Super Bowl. And so, yes, best ball allows me to do so. I think what he's referring to, I think, is that you don't know when Keaton Mitchell is going to take one carry for a 60-yard touchdown. And so
Correct.
In redraft, it's really hard to put him in your lineup if he's only going to get 7 touches. This probably won't be the week he gets the 60-yard touchdown. So from that sense, yeah, I get it. I think he's a fine pick in both, like on your bench, and just see what happens. We do not know exactly what Mike McDaniel's plan is for this backfield. Maybe his plan is legit 10 touches a week for Keaton Mitchell. You could start that if you're in a deep enough league, you know, 12 teams with maybe 10 starters or something. You could start Keaton Mitchell if he's getting 10 touches a game. So I think putting him on your bench is such low risk when he goes in round 11, 12, 13.
He's also one of those guys that he will, at, you know, whether maybe it's in the first couple of weeks, he will have some sort of crazy highlight, 60 yards, 65, juke four guys, highlight that gets shown all over social media, SportsCenter, everything. And like, you'll be able, if there's a guy in your league, if there's a person in your league that like loves those hype guys that are like, he'll be an instant, like kind of sell high guy too. But yeah. I'm with you on Mitchell. Certainly a freak athlete, like the talent, have him in a lot of dynasty leagues. So hope springs eternal on him, on McDaniel unlocking what we all know is there with Keaton Mitchell. Speaking of small but fast and explosive freak athletes, how about Xavier Worthy? For me, currently going at 124. This is a guy that last year, Adam, was going like in the third, fourth round. People were drafting this guy as a top 15 wide receiver last year. And last year, obviously, a lost year. He gets, friendly fire with Travis Kelce. The shoulder hurts. He's never the same. And we had Dan Graziano on last week, who is a great NFL insider and hardcore fantasy player. So he really understands what we're looking for. He was at Chiefs camp. He's well-versed on that team. It's a team that he covers. And he talked to me about the fact that the team last year intentionally limited Xavier Worthy's route tree, right? Because of the injury, they wanted to protect his shoulder. And that Dan said on the show how Andy Reid told him Xavier Worthy had a great offseason, looks noticeably stronger. And when Dan was at camp, like, he was just like, look, Rashee Rice wasn't even doing like 7-on-7. They were just doing like 7-on-7s with Rashee Rice. Like, he's not all the way back. Travis Kelce's 37. Xavier Worthy is somebody that has significant draft capital that, you know, that Taylor Swift famously ran down the hall screaming, we got Xavier Worthy, we got Xavier Worthy. And so I just feel like a year later, because last year was such a disappointment, that people are just like, whatever on Xavier Worthy. Whereas like that discount's baked in. I mean, he's going as wide receiver 50 in ADP, a guy that we had as a top 40 player last year. Like, the talent's still there, the system is still there, and you could argue the opportunity maybe is as good, if not better. I know Rice was suspended for 6 games last year, but again, given his injury, given off-field concerns with Rice, another year older of Kelce, give me some Xavier Worthy this year.
Yeah, I think the best case for Xavier Worthy is the Chiefs realize that running their offense through Rashee Rice has not led to efficient offense. This offense has not been good throwing 3-yard drag routes to Rashee Rice 12, 13 times a game. Rashee Rice also has the knee thing, like Matthew mentioned. And so I think they should try to be more explosive and get the ball downfield. The way defenses have played the Chiefs is do not allow that. And that's been bad for Xavier Worthy. He's running vertical routes. They play this too high stuff against Mahomes. That's why I really like Kenneth Walker this year. If they're going to continue to do that, Kenneth Walker is going to go absolutely nuts. But yeah, this is obviously way too cheap for Xavier Worthy. I mean, they need to add a wide receiver also. I mentioned the Colts. I know that the Chiefs poked around on Steph Diggs. He chose to go to Washington. They should be adding weaponry also. I mean, they need help badly. But yeah, I'd love to see them feature Worthy more. I still don't know how good he actually is at football, but it's not very expensive to find out this year for sure.
Brooks and Flannels asks, sleeping the enemy back as the OC going right. Do you think he's going to reignite the Kansas City offense? I think Dan VDM also said something like that. Do you think Eric Bieniemy coming back to call the plays, or maybe not call the plays because Andy always does, but like to be the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs, does that help reignite this offense? I will tell you, because I know people that have coached with and under Eric Bieniemy, he is a in-your-face kind of guy. He is a no BS, like, you know, you are going to perform. And so maybe there was a little bit of lackadaisical nature for Kansas City once he left, and, you know, he's coming back to bring that fire. Have you guys, I'm curious how that's affected your ranks and projections.
I mean, no matter what you think about Bieniemy, getting rid of Matt Nagy is a plus, you know, and I try not to be mean to guys, but gosh, I think Matt Nagy is just such a mess, and it does give me some pause on Giants guys. And I really like Giants guys this year, but the Nagy stuff gives me pause. I think removing Nagy is certainly a benefit. And yeah, they've had great run games. I think like combining getting an actual good running back again with Bieniemy coming back is just more good for Walker. And yeah, the offense as a whole. I mean, if Walker starts shredding, that's going to be good for Worthy also. The safeties will have to get closer in the box.
Yeah, Stuntman Chuck saying the Pino definitely kicking in for Barry. This is true. My audience knows, Adam, that that for whatever reason, Pino Grigio is what messes me up. Like, I can I'm impervious to beer. I swear to God, I can drink a six-pack of beer and it doesn't affect me at all. But I have like two glasses of Pinot Grigio and I am hammered.
Wow.
What is your drink? What is your drink of choice?
Yeah, I drink red wine with my wife a lot of nights. And yeah, if I'm going out, I usually drink some more whiskey stuff. But yeah, I'm not a big drinker in general. But yeah. For sure. Let's put it this way. If I drank six beers, I'd be absolutely hammered. Like you just said, your six beers is fine. I'd be absolutely hammered for six beers.
No, I don't know why it is, but beer does not do anything for me. But Pinot Grigio, Pinot Matty. Has me rolling around. Okay. So last two for us here. And your final guy is Tank Bigsby. Talk to me about why you're in on Bigsby beyond just the if something happens to Saquon. Or is it that? Is it simply that?
So Saquon is 29 years old, and he has over 2,000 touches in his career. The yards per carry last year, I thought was at least somewhat to blame on offensive line play and the Kevin Petullo scheme, but it still was really, really scary. Tank Bigsby is a very good natural runner. You know, he doesn't really play in the pass game. He is a very, very good natural runner. It would not shock me if there is a small standalone role this year for Tank Bigsby. Give Saquon a break for 4, 6, 7 carries per game. So depending on how deep your league is in, maybe you could use that. But more importantly is what Matthew mentioned. This is the best handcuff in the entire NFL, in my opinion. And it's so much better in redraft than best ball. You just leave Tank Bigsby on your bench. You're not taking zeros. He is a perfect one for one for this Eagles offense to Saquon between the tackles running. I actually think he has, you know, more power, obviously less burst, big play ability. And so like these handcuff running backs is how you build super teams. You know, put a few of them on your bench. And then if you get one Tank Bigsby, or if you get one Brian Robinson, or whatever you like as the best handcuffs, Woody Marks, whatever, you could have a real super team that way. We would have a monster projection. I mean, monster projection in most spots on Tank Bigsby if Saquon went down. And I think he's the kind of guy that's actually worth carrying all year. Like, there's not that many handcuffs that I think you want to carry on your bench all year. You want to be churning. I think Bigsby is one you actually want to carry on your bench all year.
That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. By the way, for what it's worth, Bigsby averaged 5.9 yards per carry last year in Philadelphia, 21%. Of his runs last year went for 10 or more yards. I mean, like, so yes, a full-time role for Tank Bigsby in Philadelphia would be fantasy goodness. And I was actually going to get into sort of theory there, because you hear so much in the pre-draft process of like for fantasy, oh, grab this guy. He's a good handcuff. He can handcuff. And so, you know, in the when you're in whatever round 14 or even round 17, which is where Bigsby's going, that makes sense, right? Especially if you drafted Barkley, I'll grab Tank Bigsby. But you know, then it's week 4, week 5, bye weeks are starting to happen. You've got a couple of other injuries. You're looking at that waiver wire, like, where am I going to find room on my roster? Barkley's been crushing. Like, how do you find the discipline to say, like, no, 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 I'm sticking with Tank. I know he's been a zero for 5 weeks now, and Barkley looks great, but I'm not dropping him, because what ends up inevitably happening is you drop him in week 5, and then Barkley goes down in week 8, and you got to spend all your fab or, you know, try to desperately trade to get Bigsby, or somebody's already picked him up and you're like, I had him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's not guys like, I think Brian Robinson would fare okay if Bijan went down, but not great. You know, the difference is, I think
it was the first name I think came to me on that one. I agree with you. It's not necessarily the best example, right?
But my point is that there's not that many handcuffs that would fare as well, or any, I think, that would fare as well as Bigsby. Like, if Gibbs went down, Pacheco can't do Gibbs-like stuff. We're not going to have that great of a projection on Pacheco. It's totally different, but on Bigsby, we would.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's right. And he's one of the things I talk about all the time, and I put this in my Draft Day Manifesto, it's up for free on fantasylife.com, is that so many people make the mistake of thinking that we play a season-long game, and we don't. We don't. Fantasy football is a weekly game that's played over the course of a season, right? And that whether it is, you know, Tank Bigsby for 2 weeks or whatever, you know, Chris Rodriguez for a couple of weeks, right? There's going to be those guys that, you know, are startable here and there, you know, for 3 weeks here. And Kamani Vidal, right? So like whatever, 4 weeks last season when Amarian Hampton was out and you knew Vidal was the guy, Vidal was like a borderline RB1. So the important thing is not just, you know, having those guys that pop, those guys at the end of the bench that pop, but knowing when to start them. Because it's one thing to say, to look back after this year and say like, oh, wow, you know, there was four different games where Keaton Mitchell had 20 fantasy points. But knowing when those are coming is the key, right? Because we know they're going to happen. We just don't know what weeks. But in a world where Barkley goes down, you know, okay, I'm starting Tank Bigsby. And so finding those players that not only would, in the right situation, have big production, but knowing that you'll know when to start them, I think, is the bigger key as well. So I think that's good advice. Last one for me here, Adam. I don't know where you guys at ETR are on the Saints this year, but I'm high on the Saints offense. I'm a Kellen Moore believer. I love Jordan Tyson. I'm in on Olave having a big year. Kellen Moore is one of my favorites for coach of the year. I think they're a pretty good bet to win the NFC West at the odds that they have. And I like Tyler Shuck as kind of a late round quarterback. I completely agree with what you said at the start of the show, which is that this is the year to absolutely wait on quarterback. It's incredibly deep, whether it's Kyler, whether it's Goff, whether it's Baker, whether it's Tyler Shuck, who I have a QB 17, his ADP is QB 20, but 17 or more fantasy points and 7-9 starts. Since he took over as a starter, he was a top 12 fantasy quarterback down the stretch last year, 6th in passing yards per game after becoming the starter. And I've said this multiple times, so my audience that's been here with every show is sick of me hearing it, but sick of me saying it. They're sick of hearing it or hearing me say it. The Pinot is kicking in, Aloha Bricks. I'm sorry, guys. You're absolutely right. I'm half drunk here. But the thing, Adam, that I subscribe to is that for all the film study we want to do and for all the stat nerding out we want to do, that people tend to forget that you're talking about human beings playing a game. And that human beings have emotions like ego and pettiness and jealousy and pride. And that there's a massive difference, forgetting everything else, there's a massive difference between Tyler Shuck coming into the season last year, where people are like, they should have drafted Shadur. And I can't believe we're going to Tyler Shuck. And should he even be the starter? And you know, he started the year on the bench. And then he gets into the game. And does he know, is he getting pulled? Like it's, you know, which guy is it going to be? There's a big difference between going into the season that year versus this year, where he walks into the building knowing this is my team. I'm the guy. They didn't draft a quarterback. They didn't go out. They have said, Tyler Shuck, you are the man. And so there's just a huge difference in sort of that mindset. And then you think about, again, what the Saints did in the offseason, what they did in the draft. Again, I'm a Moore believer. They were first in pace of play last year, the Saints were. So I'm all in on Tyler Shuck.
Yeah, and that's going to be sticky on Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore offense has always run very fast. They're playing indoors. They have a ton of dome games, even on the road. And so, yeah, I like the Saints a lot. They also improved the offensive line, which I think is important for Shuck. David Edwards was one of the big free agent signings. And they get Eric McCoy back, who, you know, was hurt all of last year, one of the better centers in the entire league. And Jordan Tyson is a baller. So it lines up really well for Tyler Shuck. I'm the only like concern I have is that the betting market is not on Tyler Shuck from a implied points perspective. You know, we can see all the look ahead lines. We kind of average them out. Saints are somewhere in like the mid 20s, which surprised me in terms of implied points per game for the season. I disagree with that. I think they're going to score. I think they're going to play fast. I disagree with it, but that's like the only level of pause that I have on Tyler Shuck. But yeah, we're all over the Saints also, especially Jordan Tyson and Olave and a little bit of Juwan Johnson here also.
Yeah, Juwan Johnson, I think, as a late round tight end, I think is really interesting because, again, they're going to play at a fast pace of play, and he's going to be their third pass catcher, basically, as well. Stuntman Chuck saying half drunk, fully bald is a pretty good team name, which I agree, and a theme of the show. I am half drunk and fully bald. All right, it's time for last call here, Adam. So comeback player of the year. I'm curious who you have here at comeback player of the year. Mahomes is at plus 185. Jayden Daniels at plus 450. Kyler Murray, 6-1. We talked about him earlier. Aaron Donald, if he actually does come back, he's 9-1. Where are you at on comeback player of the year?
Yeah, so anytime Mahomes gets into the mix on these awards, I it's so hard to fade him because the people who vote for these awards, keep in mind, I do a lot of this stuff with awards.
Yeah.
We are looking for what the voters will do, not what should happen, not who I think should be MVP or comeback player of the year. It is what the voters, and these voters love Patrick Mahomes. I mean, like, it's like a running bit, you know, like Chris Collinsworth, yeah. Like Mahomes throws like a 3-yard pass. He's like, oh my God, Patrick Mahomes, you know, and it's funny. And I agree. So it's tough to fade Mahomes here, considering he's coming off of the ACL and he's going to play week one. I think if I had to take someone right now, it would on downboard, it would be Malik Nabers, like to come off of such a bad injury, to have all this rhetoric throughout the whole offseason that he might not play this year at all. This is such a mess. For him to come back and look incredible in camp, and then say he goes out and has a Malik Nabers season, which if Malik Nabers had never been hurt, we would probably have him as a top 12 pick this year. And so if he can go and catch 100 balls, go over 1,000 yards, he's, I believe, 18-1 or so. That would be the one that I would consider.
Yeah, I have him at 12-1 in terms of the odds that were here, but you know, it's a little all over the place. It's moving in the right direction because of all the training camp videos that have come out, that seeing how good he looks. So I'm with you on, and he's also in a major market because you're 100% right. And you know, my old co-host Jay Croucher, he's also big into the future market. Shout out Jay Croucher. He lost a ton of money, a massive amount of money, like a significantly massive amount of money, because he had DeMar Hamlin for comeback player of the year.
Yes.
You know, and then it went to, you know, Joe Flacco. So I'm with you on Mahomes. It's just so obvious, right? You know, Joe Burrow, you know, like, could you see Joe Burrow winning it again? Right. I mean, like, it's every other year, McCaffrey would be somebody that you could certainly see you know, winning it, because you know, McCaffrey gets nicked up one, you know, misses one game and he's in it. But so I think Mahomes is really interesting. Malik Nabers, I think, is a great call. I'll give you just the only other one that I would give you would be Travis Hunter. That if, you know, if he does successfully play both sides of the ball, we think the Jaguars are going to be pretty good. He's such a unique player that, you know, and that was such a devastating injury. If Travis Hunter comes back and is good on both sides of the ball, you know, ends are all pro votes on both sides of the ball, and they're going to want to reward that, but they're not going to know how to reward that, because it's not like you can make him all pro for both teams, or I don't know. Like, Travis Hunter would be sort of interesting there. Micah Parsons is interesting. Yeah. And depending on when Kittle comes back, obviously the fans love Kittle, but I'm with you. It's Mahomes will win this award, barring anything. It's closing time, which means you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. We've got a minute left, Adam. Anything you want to promote over at establishtherun.com? Where else can we find you?
Yeah, best way to kind of get into our ecosystem for free is just go on YouTube, find Establish the Run, and hit subscribe there. It's totally free. Or you can follow me on Twitter there at Adam Levitan, and you can kind of see what we get into on a daily basis.
I think I don't have this for a lot of people, but you are one of the people that I follow on Twitter that I have the alerts on, so that when you tweet something, it always pops up for me, because I think you're really good on social media. I think you're good in general, but I think you're really good on social media. I also have it on for Evan, because I know it'll never get bothered. my phone won't blow up. You know what I mean? It's good. You know, when he comes out of hibernation. Anyway, Adam Levitan, you are awesome. Thanks so much. Good luck at ETR. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace out.